Welcome to the Toffee Blues, your source for all things Everton, and welcome to another podcast, the end of season podcast. Lots to get through tonight, and to get through it all with me, I've got Teddy McAllister and Thomas Robertson. We're going to be starting off as usual with the extra time segment. Unfortunately, in this case, we're going to be looking back on the whimper with which we ended our season as we lost to relegate to Bournemouth, so a battle of laps indeed. Then we're reflecting on the news which probably hit us even harder yesterday, the news that club stalwart Leighton Baines is retiring from football. And then with the season now over, again, it's back to where we left off with the player review segments returning on tonight's show. And all that will be followed by our quiz to finish. As you know, the segments are separate, so we'll introduce them and whatnot. We'll get straight into it. We're going to start with the final extra time show of 2019-20 season. And sadly, as we've gotten used to during that season, it's a review of an Everton defeat. Everton bow out on another low note with a defeat at home to a team who got relegated regardless of the win that they achieved against us, to leave us going into the admittedly short six-week summer break in a very negative mindset, it has to be said. We're all feeling very down on our luck after what we witnessed yesterday, and that's sadly going to boil over until we hopefully sign somebody. I'm joined by Thomas and Terry to go over that malaise for one last painful time. Lads, let's be honest, it was a very fitting end to a terrible season, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it pretty much just summed up our performance for the whole year, which, to be fair, I was expecting. I mean, if they had to come and win, if there was a team they wanted to do it against, it was going to be us, let's be honest. If there was a team they wanted, who might not be up for the game even slightly, it was going to be us all day long, really.
Why do we do this? I know it's easy to say that they have more to play for, but why do we always provide the perfect sideshow for the team looking to achieve something? I know they didn't achieve staying up in the end, but why are we always so charitable in these situations? It's gone on for years. Why is it?
The characters in the squad. There's not enough fighters. Like, we've dropped, I read a stat earlier on, we've dropped 19 points this season, or I can now say last season.
Thank God we can say that.
Yeah, dropped 19 points to teams in the bottom five. That shows.
That is embarrassing. Bottom six, I think it was, but even still.
Well, whichever, it doesn't speak to the quality of football, it speaks to the strength of character. We roll over and show our stomachs to any team who've got a little bit of like fight in them, a little bit of nastiness, a little bit of
nous, to be honest.
Commitment, is it what I was going to say? Like
that, yeah.
Andre Gomez is a better footballer than anyone except maybe Jack Grealish in that bottom five, six teams. But they've got players who are absolute dogs who will fight for everything. And I'm not going to like take out Gomez because there's everyone in that squad for the most part.
I think it's very much possible that you could dig out Gomez individually because his levels of commitment have just been not non-existent there.
Well, I hold him up because since the return from the lockdown, I mean, I really like Gomez. Just, you know, it doesn't seem like that because I've been digging him out the last few weeks. But he's a fantastic player who can run the game when he's at it. But when he's not at it, he's
a liability, isn't he?
Yeah. And that just sums up the problem with Everton's squad. It goes across the whole squad. There's only one or two players who've got that feisty sort of passion and commitment in them that they need to go that extra step. There's like, it's on the wall in Finch Farm, isn't it? Like, talent will, hard work will beat talent if talent does not work hard. And
you think that'd sink in eventually with some of them, because that's exactly what our problem is, isn't it?
Yeah, I just think we've got a lack of leaders and a lack of characters in the team. And obviously, the ones we have got, is it any coincidence that the town turning form since the lockdown coincides with Holgate's injury? Holgate's one of the few players who's committed, who gets in the face of the opposition players and fights. Now, he can't do it all by himself, but without him.
He led by example, though, at times, with that back in the back, particularly before the lockdown as well.
Yeah, and I'm not even saying we've missed him as a defender. We've missed him as a character, and we need more of that. And that's been the problem, and it was the problem against Bournemouth, that they had something to fight for, and we didn't. So we just went, right then, you know, like, just lacking that extra yards of effort that they were willing to give. I think I read another stat that 17% of their points came against Everton last season. That's awful.
They got 34 points and we gave them 6 of them. So it is, yeah, we'll be around that.
I mean, a team who have been relegated and have been awful all season did the double over us, and it's not because they've got better footballers than us, it's because they've got more committed players than us, and that's the biggest thing we need to address in the transfer window. It's not about buying quality players, it's about buying quality characters, I think.
It's very much a character issue, I think. We've got some talented players there. If we've got some players who can go next to them, who can knock a few heads together when the got one gets tough. Because that's what we're seriously lacking. We saw that on a number of occasions yesterday and throughout the season, of course. But Seamus Coleman is not captain material whatsoever. I know some people might be fans of Coleman here, and you guys might be. I am absolutely done with Seamus Coleman as an Everton player. I mean, that's a bit outlandish, but I just don't think he's fit for purpose as an Everton player now. And I think we all talk about Leighton Baines going, but he's probably more qualified to be bombed out than maybe Leighton Baines doesn't deserve to go this soon. But I'm not happy with Seamus Coleman at all this season.
I don't mind him, to be honest. I mean, I always think he could do more as kind of a captain. And obviously, because as he gets worse and he gets older and he doesn't have the legs that he used to have, you know, he has to be playing that more important role kind of as a team captain. And I can't fault him that much. I mean, he doesn't really get in anyone's face, which, you know, does my head in sometimes. You know, sometimes if you see like a crunching tackle come in on one of our players, it's not like the rest of the team are, you know, are at them, you know, like... Not, I mean, in I'm not asking for another Roy Keane. Yeah, but like, you know, a Roy Keane would have, you know, you'd hammer them, you know. But like, we don't have a player like that. And but to even... be fair,
sorry, go on. Yeah.
No, it's just we don't have enough. We're in a real problem at the moment where the midfield isn't good enough in terms of quality. But then we also, as Terry said, we need characters, but we need quality, and that's not always the easiest thing to find, because I think Gomez has quality on the ball. Is he a strong character? I'm not sure. Really. He never seems to care. Tom Davies likes to put an attack in the derby sometimes, but he doesn't.
Tom
he
Davies kind of is just the other way around. I think he's got the character, but he's not got the ability.
I don't even know how much of the character he's got, to be honest, because in it, when you kind of lack the quality that he does, you need to be looking for much more character from him in games like this, when it absolutely doesn't matter and you just need to fight for the sake of fighting and it doesn't matter. And even he's been awful since the restart. He's been one of my least favourite players for most of the season. He's just, his decline has just been so dramatically awful. And especially because centre midfield is a place where, you know, you need a bunch of shithouses, really. You need people who are going to happy make some crunching tackles. Obviously,
put it this way, you can't hide.
Yeah, you can't.
And our midfield is hidden all season.
Yeah, Gay was never really like a shithouse player, but like he was happy to put in tackles. He was happy to just snap ankles if he needed to at the end of the day.
He mucked in, and our midfield, that's it. In a 4-4-2 in particular, but regardless of the formation, you can't hide in midfield, and too many of our players hide, both on and off the ball, by the way. Not putting tackles in when we haven't got the ball, but also not looking for the forward pass when we have got the ball. We're not ambitious enough, the centre midfielders, when they pick the ball up either. And I think that's one of the main things why I was laying into Seamus Coleman a bit as well, as that his mindset, his mentality when he picks the ball up is absolutely shocking. Every time you see him and you think, come on, bomb it down the wing, or, you know, look for a ball down the line, he turns back and passes it to Michael Keane. Every single time he tried to look for,
I'd rather pass to Michael Keane than Theo Walcott, to be fair. I can't stand giving Walcott the ball.
But the fact of the matter is, he's the right winger. He's supposed to be. And I mean, that's another issue in itself. Maybe if Theo Walcott isn't creating enough on the right and he's not holding his own. But Seamus Coleman needs to be looking for more forward passes and making more forward moves, because it's no point. Literally, he just walks up, and as soon as somebody presses him, he turns back and passes it to the centre-backs. And that's just not good enough. I mean, this is the exact issue that we have, is that players are not being ambitious enough on the ball. Luca Dean's probably about as ambitious as we've got in terms of players trying to move us forward. And even then, he doesn't always play brilliantly, but he's been one of the better ones since the season resumes. But
I've got loads of time for Luca Dean for that regard. Absolutely. I think he is a proper Everton player. Not only is he will he get in the face of an opposition and he'll give as good as he gets, and he'll mouth off and he'll fight. He's also got that bit of quality as well. He's got that, he wants to go forward. How much can he do from left back? You need that across the pitch. I'm all for Luca Dean. I think the first thing we should be doing this summer before we even sign a player is getting him on a new contract. We've got Calvert-Lewin on one. We've got Holgate on one. We've got Richarlison on one. I think make the four, the big four.
They're the four best players we've got.
Get him on one and lock him down, because I think he's one of the two most crucial players of the club, him and Richarlison.
Absolutely, and I think the four you've just named, when we talk about characters, they're probably the four only characters we've got in terms of actually maybe having the right mentality.
Yeah, I mean, I'll just go back to what you said before. I don't particularly agree with what you said on Coleman. That's not to say I think Coleman's, particularly playing well or anything like that. I think it's a moot point before we even begin, because he's clearly what Carlo's man, isn't he? He likes Coleman. He's played Coleman a lot. Coleman suits the sort of shape he wants to play with, that sort of right back come third centre back. He's lost his ability going forward, but he's gained ability in defence, which is weird. It was never his strong suit, but he seems to have been doing a lot better.
Yeah, he has, to be fair. But at the end of the day, he's really struggling.
Yeah, I mean, the thing about the leadership, though, is captain, especially at the English clubs. I remember I listened to part of a, ironically, a Peter Crouch podcast saying in English clubs, captain is much, much more an off-the-field position. So everyone is clamouring for Holgate to be captain, but Holgate might not want to go round and dish the fines out to the team and all that stuff on the, and organise the Christmas night out. I don't think you need a new captain. I think you just need leaders on the pitch. Tim Cahill was never our captain. Neither was Stephen Naismith. Neither was Thomas Gravesen. They weren't our captains, but they were bastards on the pitch. And they led on the pitch, but they never had the armband. They didn't need it. I think the captain role is not as important in regards to on the field character as just having those characters on the pitch. Tim Cahill is the perfect example. He never, ever, maybe once or twice in a pinch, but he was never, I can never remember him leading the team out as a captain. He just occasionally took the armband when Neville or Jagielka or whoever went off. I'd like to see, when we buy these centre midfielders and right midfielders, I want to see them have a bit of needle. I want to see them come in and go, yeah, yous can play. He's a good player, but I also want yous to be bastards, basically. Without using the word that Jose Mourinho used, if you saw that clip of him on, there was a trailer for the Amazon Prime. The Amazon Prime show for Tottenham. He says the Tottenham team need to all be seeing you next Tuesdays. I think we need a bit of that. We need to sign a few Tuesdays. And I get what you mean with Coleman, but I think he's going to be one of the players who, and you've got to remember as well, Carlos, he's off the pitch. I think he's took one look at Coleman and thought, well, he's got the right attitude. His ability, he's not the flying, right back he was in Martinez's first season, but that's beside the point. I think he likes his impact on the dressing room.
I don't even think it's necessarily, he doesn't have to be a flying right back. He just needs to be able to pick a forward pass and maybe put a cross in a bit better. I think that's what we're missing.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. I've said this for 2 years. I think we need a right back Luca Dean. Still haven't found one. We tried Sidibe, hasn't worked. Obviously, he's left now, and the club's been pretty final in its wording on the tweet, hasn't it? Saying, good luck for your career. He's not coming back. So it's not as, it's not as easy as that. But when we bought Luca Dean, did anyone think we were buying the league's best left back? No, we're buying some lad from Barca who's, he's been at PSG, he's been at Roma. He's been at some good clubs, this player, and he's only young. Come in, he's absolutely qualities. He's creating more chances than any other fullback in the league. Left back, I don't know which one it is. But we need to, Marcel Brands and the club needs more of them this summer. No more no more Iwobis, no more Delphs, not even any more Moise Keens who are a slow burn. We need Luca Deans, we need Richarlisons, we need players who go into the team and their quality straight away.
Yeah, that's exactly it. And I think we were discussing how many do you think we'll get this summer in terms of additions?
I think we'll be looking for 3 or 4. Whether we get that many, I'm not even certain. Because obviously we have no idea. Obviously, the ESC will tell us we're in like millions of quid debt, we can't spend anything. Then other people will come out and say, you know, we kind of do financial fair play. Obviously, we don't actually know that. What we need is a new midfield, let's be honest, and probably a right back at some point. And then maybe even a goalkeeper, but I don't know how much we're going to get into that because obviously kind of starts sounding like a broken record if we keep talking about Pickford because another shocking performance, obviously, against Bournemouth. But yeah. I think in terms of signings, we'll only be looking, as kind of Terry mentioned us before, kind of 2-3, maximum 4, to be honest.
What position? I think centre midfield's got to be the utmost importance,
yeah,
hasn't it?
I mean, centre midfield is so important, but obviously the club clearly... They must fancy Gabamin when he comes back. Obviously, we've seen nothing of him. But we do still have a player that we signed for, what, 25 million or something, who is a defensive midfielder, you know, kind of what we've been lacking in the 4-4-2. So they will want to spend loads of money on loads of centre midfielders before they can see, you know, what he can do. And they also won't want to sign loads and loads of centre midfielders without potentially shipping out Sigurdsson or maybe even Davies. I can't even see either of the two leaving. But they won't just want to sign centre midfielders over and over again, because we can't afford to have an overloaded central midfield when we only play two anyway, when we're playing the 4-4-2. So I think we might only even be looking at maybe one centre midfielder, which is annoying. But I think a right midfield has to be a massive, massive target for us now, especially considering, because obviously we've spoken there about Coleman struggles kind of going forwards now. But to be fair, he was looking so much better when we were playing the five at the back or the three at the back, whatever it is, when he played centre-back. He's had to switch to a 4-2-3-1 here because Sigurdsson, Gomez and Davies can't play in a two. So for the last kind of two games, you know, we've seen him, we've seen the switch to the 4-2-3-1, which doesn't suit Coleman anymore. But the right midfield role is so necessary now because it's such a specific kind of area of Ancelotti's tactics now. You do have to be able to defend, but you have to be able to go forwards as well. It's a peculiar position, and obviously Iwobi hasn't moulded into it very well at all. He's really struggled, and Sidibe almost at times looked like that kind of player, maybe once or twice this season, but obviously he wasn't good enough. But we do need a very versatile right midfielder now who's going to be able to defend, but then obviously carry the ball forwards as well.
Absolutely, and I think right mid and centre mid, I think, are the two, but we've got to get them right. As Terry said before, they can't be slow burners. We've got to have players who can address issues relatively quickly.
Yeah, I think a financial fair play is the biggest thing, or Premier League profits and sustainability, which are, whatever the Premier League version is, which is a bit tighter than the European one, I think. I think if there was no regulation, I think we'd be going mad this summer. I think we'd be getting 5 or 6. We'd be getting a new keeper, 2 new midfielders, possibly a striker as well. But obviously, it does exist. So, centre midfielder, centre back. People don't think we need a centre back, but I think they're going to get one anyway. And right midfielder. And then I think they might look at a loan again. It's similar to Sidibe, if they can move on John Joe Kenny. I think if John Joe Kenny's here as long as John Joe Kenny's here, I don't think they'll get another one. I don't think they think they can carry 3 right backs. Well, they can't, let's be honest. It just make no financial sense when they need to fill positions elsewhere. But if they can find a buyer for him, then I think they'll look at the loan market. And they might even look at the loan market if the suitable quality player comes up for other positions. But you know, centre mid, centre back, and a right midfielder, I think, will be what we bring in, whether that's, you know, 2 buy, 1 loan, whatever. And they just all need to be quality. I think they want Gabriel, which is, you know, obvious, a blind man can see that. And then out after that, God knows, maybe they obviously wanted Højbjerg, that hasn't come off. Allen, maybe. I think if there was no regulation, they would probably be planning for the season as if they don't have Gabamin and just let him be a bonus. But they can't do that. Like, you know, like Thomas said, they've got a £25 million midfield there. All right, he's had 2 horrendous injuries back to back, but they can't just pretend they haven't got that because he's he's probably there as a big, massive, you know, looming thing on the books. So you can't pretend he's not there in the squad because he is there. Like the spreadsheet, the financial spreadsheet shows £25 million centre midfielder. They can't plan for life not having him because they will have him.
It's just right. It's annoying, really, being in this stupid spreadsheet either, isn't it? Like, you know, in the days before FFP, you know, Manchester City would have been a joke like we were for buying Rocky Santa Cruz for stupid money, you know.
I know. It's even in the financial fair play era, it's just typical Everton, isn't it? We had the freedom to spend well and gave it to absolute idiots, and now we've got decent manager in. We're hamstrung by those decisions, but I don't know. Let's talk about the game anyway, the transfers, because this happens every time.
Every time. I think it's because we're that dissatisfied with what we've witnessed.
We just go on about how
we're going to address all the problems, because we hate all the problems that we keep seeing when we watch the match. And I think that's literally how we end up going off on these tangents. But yeah, the game was everything you'd expect from the typical charitable Everton. Dominic Solanke got a goal as well, which is just vintage, you know.
I got a couple of things I wanted out the weekends. We got Watford and Bournemouth went down, and Moyes Keane got a goal. For anyone who watched the pre-match, that was on my wish list. There was a couple of things like an Everton win that were off me wish that I didn't get, but sorry.
Nope, didn't want to win anyway, you know. It's fun, man.
Moyes Keane was good, though. I think we should mention him, to be fair, because
yeah, he was very good.
He's taken his opportunity when he's come in, and he did really well, to be fair. It was like when he started against Newcastle. He had a good game, to be fair, at Goodison. He played well. And obviously, for whatever reasons, he hasn't got his starts. But if you're looking for players who you want, as Ancelotti mentioned, you want healthy competition in the squad. You know, you want competition, you know, breeds better players. And if he's coming in and doing that, that makes Calvert-Lewin sit up. He might have thought he was quite safe, to be fair. In a two-striker formation, we've got three strikers realistically at the club. If, you know, Richarlison does count as a striker now, but he's not an out-and-out striker. Calvert-Lewin might have felt quite comfortable for a while. Moyes Keane's just turned up and he's had a brilliant game. He was doing all the hold-up play that Calvert-Lewin was getting really good at before the lockdown started.
And show more control, be more technical ability.
Oh, you know, yeah, no, he had much more technical ability than I think Calvert-Lewin shown, but partnered with his ability to create chances, he was also holding up the ball. You know, sometimes you see strikers who are, they want to just take it down for themselves, they want to dribble, but he was happy to play passes. You know, he did it, one for Richarlison on the edge of the box. He set up like the assist of the assist for the goal, didn't he, when he kind of put in Walcott or Coleman, whoever it was. You know, he was doing really well. I was a bit disappointed to see him go off, but I was hoping we might just switch to a two-striker formation at that point, because, I mean, we were playing awfully. We might as well have just gone all four.
So they've gone for broke, yeah.
Yeah, but I think it's actually, I think he's timed that really well, because Calvert-Lewin would have been going into the summer thinking, I haven't had the best restart, but not like Moyes Keane's given us any trouble at the end of the day.
Untouchable almost.
Yeah, but Keane's now turned up and he's had a brilliant game. I'll be interested to see how he does play in the 4-4-2, which I'd imagine we'll switch back to next season. Obviously, we've only played a couple of 4-2-3-1 games. I'll be interested to see how he plays with Richarlison. I don't know if it'll work, because obviously the two-strike formation's been, it's worked so well because Calvert-Lewin's happy to go up for headers, which Moyes Keane's not always keen on. He prefers the ball at his feet. But we'll have to see, but a very, very good game from Moyes Keane, to be fair.
He seemed more relaxed, didn't he? Like, when you know, it's when he was coming off the bench, he was, not only was he running everywhere and didn't seem to know where he was meant to be, he seemed knackered straight away. I don't know whether it was anxiety or what, or, you know, desperate to make some impression. But when when he started the game, same as with Newcastle, he seemed to grow a little bit into it, because he knew, I've not got 10 minutes. I've got the whole game ahead of me. I'll get other opportunities. I'll touch the ball again, you know, whereas if you come on for 10 minutes, you might not touch it more than two or three times, if, you know, depending on who you're playing. But, you know, Carlos said, hasn't he, like, he's going to be our player next season, which to me means I'm going to play him a lot more next season. So I personally, you know, don't think, in a two-man system, I think Calvert-Lewin is the straw that stirs the drink there. I think it's him and one of the others. Now, whether Richarlison, you know, goes out wide for some games and Keane starts, or they play a front three, I personally couldn't see Keane and Richarlison playing together in a two. I just see them. They operate in the same areas. Like, they both want to be off the last defender. They don't like Calvert-Lewin's a little bit more unselfish. You know what
he's
I mean?
He's more target man, Calvert-Lewin.
Yeah, he creates space for other strikers, which the other two, you know, can feed off of. I personally prefer Richarlison up front, so I think it's a case of Keane's got to try and get in when he can. But obviously, if he's playing well enough, Richarlison just on the pitch is always a danger if he plays. I don't really like him on the right, but I don't mind Richarlison on the left because he get in the 4-4-2. I mean, because he gets to come in a lot more and you know, exploit the space a lot more. I don't want to see him just pulling far right every game and just whipping in crosses. That's not what I want to see Richarlison doing. He's either up front or he's in that sort of inside left with Luca Dean on the outside of him. But ideally.
There could be a place for him on the left because Bernard hasn't done very well. And Iwobi, as we said before, hasn't been great either. So there's still an opening in that left midfield position. Even obviously Anthony Gordon could go in there as well. But that's still very much up for grabs for any of those four to play in that position.
If we don't get a right winger or one doesn't become available... Anthony Gordon, when he went on the right, I know that's not his preferred position, but you know, if you're a young kid and you go into this Everton team, you'd look across it and go, right, he probably in his ideal world had played that Richarlison role as well, that sort of second striker. But he's obviously going to look at it and go, £50 million player who's in my way there, and then another £30 million player or whatever we paid for Keane. On the left, I've got, you know, Iwobi and Bernard and possibly Richarlison. All right, he's been playing better than the two of them. But if I'm Anthony Gordon, I just look and go, that right mid's mine. I'm gonna make that. I'm gonna be. We want from the right midfield. We want someone to stretch the play, to stay out wide, and to be that third goal threat along with the two strikers. If I'm Anthony Gordon, I just go, that's mine. I know I prefer to play on the left, but if I nail down that right hand side, that's mine. I'm starting every game.
An interesting idea as well would also be if Gordon does slot in that position. What's to stop him and Richarlison swapping roles during the game and giving the opposition something to think about?
Yeah, I mean, this is how a lot of, you know, young players get the, you know...
And the stripes.
Yeah, I hate bringing these up, but Alexander-Arnold became a right-back because he thought, that's how I'm getting in the team. Now look at him. He's doing brilliantly. I think, you know, I'm all for it. I think it speaks a lot to young players' character if they play out of position to get themselves in the team. Because it's not like massively out of position, is it? If he plays left midfield / striker to go on the right, you know what I mean? Like, when he played yesterday, he ran at the back of their players, which is more than Walcott does. Walcott never, you know, has the ball at his feet and runs at them. That's what Gordon was doing. He was trying things. He had the opposition, you know, fullback worried. I'd like to see him in pre-season, you know, unless we get someone quality there, you know. Then you just, you know, dipping Gordon in and out across the season, across all those positions. But if we don't get the right player for the right, I'd say to Gordon, go, how much do you want it, lads? Play there and make that your own.
Absolutely. Just one last thing. Obviously, we're talking about competition for places. Do you think that could help Jordan Pickford? Obviously, he's been awful lately. But could that be a nice challenge for him? Maybe he feels he's untouchable at the moment, that he needs a bit of a rocket up his backside.
I think competition's what we've spoken about for Jordan Pickford since he arrived, really. I mean, when he came, it was the season after we signed Stekenberg as a third choice, and he ended up being first choice. He's now only just left the club. You'd be forgiven for thinking he wasn't still here. I mean, he's ridiculously old now. I can't even like imagine how old he is. But he came in, and he did well for his first season. He came from obviously an awful, awful Sunderland side. But then we still haven't signed competition. Losel came in, or we don't know if he's awful, but the fact he's being loaned to a struggling Huddersfield says a lot about him as a player. They clearly didn't fancy him when he joined. They took a punt on him because obviously he was a free transfer. Yeah. He'd been released. You know, you take a chance, it clearly didn't work. Stekenberg was never pulling up any trees, was he? He was never causing any problems to Jordan Pickford. And we've been crying out for competition for Pickford for so long. And I think, even if he doesn't have competition at the club now, competition for the England goalkeeper might be a massive thing for him now, because obviously Henderson's had a very good season. Nick Pope's always in with a shout of getting into the England team. If we don't provide him competition at the club, he might almost stop perking up his performances purely because he doesn't want to lose that England number one spot, does he? I mean, it's one of his defining characteristics, obviously, that penalty shootout against Colombia. Like, but he needs competition at the club. And obviously we've been linked with Romero, who I think it would make sense. United probably don't want to keep him around if they've got Dean Henderson coming through, because they won't want to lose Dean Henderson, really, especially considering how young he is. And Romero wouldn't be a bad option, to be fair. But it's almost got to the point for me is John Pickford just not very good? That's the problem. I think he's good at certain aspects of goalkeeping, but is he a very good all-round goalkeeper? Like, does he have the cool head that you need? I think absolutely not. And he maybe it'll just take an older goalkeeper like Romero is. I mean, Romero's not really old, but he's not like in the youth of his career. Maybe it'll take a goalkeeper to come in who's still capable, who's still got like a calm head about him, and is good enough to kind of get into the team to maybe eventually kickstart Pickford and improve his game.
Well, I've heard rumours about Salvatore Sirigu, which I think would be a fantastic idea.
It depends how much he'd ask for, I think. I mean, I can see why he'd come. But that's the same for Romero as well. Romero will be on a decent wage at United. I think he'll be quite happy to stay as the number two. But if they do tell him now to get out the door because they've got Dean Henderson, he'll be looking for a club where he could earn a wage. And obviously, it's not ideal to hear, but he could earn that wage at us, to be fair. Sirigu would be an interesting one. I think he's getting on a bit now, though. I can't actually think about how old he is.
He's 33.
Yeah.
For a goalkeeper, that's really, not that old. And
it's not that old, but I don't think we want to end up with another Martin Stekelenburg, to be fair. That's just kind of sat around, kind of part of the furniture, not really doing anything major. But I think goalkeeper is going to have to be a problem that we address at some point, because, I mean, it was an awful save, but we should also mention how bad Keane was for that goal, for the third goal. He just kind of looked at it and watched it roll in. It was really strange. It was like he just stopped playing. I couldn't really get my head around that, but awful from Pickford yet again. And he just needs to, I mean, we've been saying this since the Newcastle game, the 3-2 game, that he just needs to calm down. It's ridiculous. He could be a very good goalkeeper, but he's just so erratic. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, he needs to be more mature. Just one thing before we finish. I mean, I was a little bit, maybe a bit over dramatic after the game finished yesterday. I think I felt very miserable. I said if we didn't address any problems, we could be relegated next season. Do you think we'll be all right next season? I'm looking for some reassurance here, lads.
I think we'll be absolutely fine. Ancelotti knows exactly what he's doing. Gabamin's almost like a new signing if he does end up,
There we go.
Because, no, I mean, we say that, but, we're looking for a centre midfield signing, and we've got a lad who played like two games before he got injured, to be fair. So he'll be coming back in the team who might answer questions that we are asking. Keane, we hope, can hit a bit of form. We've got bright, young players like Branthwaite and Gordon. We'll be fine next season. Whether it'll be the season where we really kick on, we can never really know. There's so many kind of false horizons for us over the years. Whether next season's going to be the one where it's absolutely going to click, probably not. But I think we'll improve definitely on this season. There's no way Ancelotti's going to take the lowest position, our worst position since, 2004 or something. So I can see massive improvements happening. Maybe not the European football that we'll be after, but we'll definitely be up there challenging again next season.
Yeah, I think it's hard to be optimistic, I guess, after watching your team get beat at home off a relegated team.
I remember when we got beat by Sunderland 3-0. Remember when that like secured them staying up? I mean, that was the kind of Bournemouth game kind of like gave me echoes of that game. That was awful. Was that still Martinez season? I can't even think now.
That was Martinez. Quite a while ago. That's got what got Martinez the sack.
I got serious flashbacks of that game yesterday. It was just kind of like we had nothing to play for. They had it all. But then if you think about it, wow, that's a dreadful, dreadful performance.
That was when they all just down tools on Martinez. That was when you knew he's got to go. Like, I mean, he was going anyway, but you could see it. Like, they weren't playing for him at that point. Just on what James said, I'm not... We were a lot worse under the Koeman-Allardyce year. We were playing, our best player was Tosin, and we had Ashley Williams at the back and we had Wayne Rooney in midfield and we finished seventh. Like, you can never, ever rule out relegation, ever, but we're outside of the top six, the Sky Six, we're as close as you can get to being, I don't want to say relegation proof, but you're not going to get relegated when you've got Richarlison and that up front. There'll always be three worst teams. Whether we actually do anything's another matter, as Thomas said, but no, I'm not worried about that. Not with this manager, not with some of these players. but that shouldn't be what we're looking at. We've got the 12th most expensive squad in Europe. We shouldn't even be looking at that. Like, it doesn't guarantee you anything, but it should guarantee you not worrying about going down at some point. It's got to be a rock bottom, and the rock bottom cannot be lower than that.
With Everton, though, just deep throwing, when you think it can't get any worse, just throw something else at you. I think it's hard to be optimistic at the moment. And, you know, like I said before, I'm glad to see the back of this season for obvious, numerous reasons. Next up, we've got the Leighton Baines tribute segment, if you like. We were dealt the news yesterday, of course, that Leighton Baines has played his last game for Everton and will be retiring from football, putting the curtain down on 13 years with the club, but leaving us with a lot of great memories. I've got Thomas, Teddy and I to look back on some of those memories in this show. Teddy, I'll start with you, mate. It wasn't the way he wanted to bow out, obviously, but you know, there is plenty of great memories for us to look back on with Leighton Baines. What's any sort of highlight for you in his 13 years here?
I mean, highlights, just, you know, picked one. You know, like, there's the free kicks at West Ham, the free kick against Chelsea in the Cup, the free kick. My personal favourite was that absolute thunderbolt against Newcastle away. Absolute unbelievable strike. That one,
eh? I was lucky enough to actually be there. That was unbelievable.
I remember him lining up for it, and I was thinking, he won't shoot from here. Someone else is over the ball with him. Is it Carsley? I can't remember who it was. But it might have been Pienaar, actually. Someone's over the ball with him as well, and I was thinking, who's going to take this? If it's a shot, it's Baines, because it's left-footed, but he surely won't shoot from there, and then he does, and just, oh, what a strike. And it's one of the most unassuming, underrated players in the Premier League era ever. The way he's gone out is just very on brand for Baines. He's always been the quiet player, hasn't he? Like, he didn't court the limelight.
Maybe he wanted to bow up while there was no fans.
Yeah, didn't get the recognition that his talent deserved outside of Everton. He's gone out that way, and it might have even been by design. He's obviously just, let's be honest, the club have known ahead of time because they've had the videos made and all that, but that's doesn't mean that they probably weren't trying to keep him right until the end. He's felt it's the right time, and he's gone in a way that's sad for everyone else because we haven't given the send off, the lap of honour and all that. But you know, we'll see him again. I think we'll get a testimonial. He'll come back to Goodison at some point. He might even come back as a coach.
Yeah, that's all. When you said see him again, that's going to set me off because I was fine until I saw someone make a video compilation with a "see you again" over it, which was just like,
yeah,
that just confounded my entire day's worth of depression yesterday.
Yeah, I mean, he Leighton Baines was, now it's just, it's terrible saying was because it not is, but was one of the top three left backs in the Premier League era. Which, when you think about the teams that have been in this league. And he hasn't won anything because he stayed at Everton when he could have gone to Bayern Munich, he could have gone to Man United. It's a travesty. It's like his talent. He is the left-back, Alan Shearer. He was one of the best in the league, but his trophy haul doesn't reflect that due to his loyalty to his club. And, you know, I personally think he's the best left-back in the Premier League era. I know a lot of people say Ashley Cole, some say Dennis Irwin.
No. Ashley Cole's the only one who's even close.
Ashley Cole in a one-off game, unbelievable. You know, like, he could take on the best wingers in world football and get the better of them. But I think, you know, Baines as an attacking fullback, he's got the record for the most assists for a fullback, 53. I just think he didn't get the recognition because he didn't go for one of the Sky clubs. Let's be honest, if he goes to Bayern Munich, and let's remember, they wanted him in 2010. David Alaba only broke through that season from the youth academy. He was Bayern Munich 2 before that. So there's no, you know, he could have gone there. He could have won trophies there if he never settled there, or David Alaba took a spot eventually. Could have went somewhere else and, you know, another massive team and won trophies there. it's criminal that he's finished his career and he won't get the recognition that he deserves based on the level of club he stayed at. And I think the club over his 13-year career, I always said, if we got a Champions League level player like Lukaku, but we can't provide them Champions League football, we've got no right to expect them to stay after a certain amount of time. Leighton Baines booked that. He stayed with the club and he's still, I think, one of the top group of fullbacks in the league now at 35. If you look at the left backs throughout the league, the 20 starting left backs, he's probably in the top six of them, because he might not have the legs over a full season, but ability wise, I still think he's quality. And his last goal for Everton, it's just a shame, you know, we lost the penalty shootout, but I think people knew when he scored that goal that we would, you know, I think that sort of dawns on people. And it's going to happen the same way in the stadium in the end, you know, when the stadiums, when people see a spade go in the ground at Bramley Moor Dock, they'll get that same feel as that Baines goal. They go, oh, we haven't got long left with Goodison. And that's where Baines felt when he scored that goal. They go, even if he signs for another year, Baines, this like sort of fan favourite, iconic people's champion, if you will, of players.
He is the Jimmy White of football, isn't he?
Yeah, he's not got long left, and he's went out on his own terms. He's retired with a contract still on the table, and how many top Everton players have declined before they've finally gone? And it's, you know, it's not soured their time here, but they've not gone out on a positive note. They've gone out on a sort of melancholic note. Baines hasn't done that. Baines has gone out on his own terms, and I already miss him. Quality player, quality Evertonian.
Yeah, it's a real travesty to lose a player of this caliber. I mean, there's a lot of debate. Is he the greatest Everton left back ever?
I don't know. I mean, he's definitely the best Everton left back I've seen, but I obviously didn't see the teams of the 80s, didn't see, you know, the ones of Katadic's teams, like, you know, Wilson and Van den Howe and people like that. Yeah, I'd say he's one of them. It's such a travesty that we didn't win that FA Cup in 2009 when we had the injuries to Jagielka and
Yakubu,
the whole spine of the team was out injured. If we'd have won that final, and we would have no problem calling these players like Cahill, like Tim Howard, like Leighton Baines, we wouldn't have a problem calling them legends. But because we're a big club who've got steeped in trophies, still the fourth most successful English club, we have a hard time calling players who didn't win a trophy legends. But in any other club who aren't as successful as we are historically, he'd just be a legend like that. There'd be no question about it whatsoever. So it's a hard tag to earn without a trophy, but I think if any players deserve it without a trophy, Baines is going to be one of them.
Certainly, I think. You talk about players who've played for Everton this century and not won anything. Obviously, nobody this century has. He's probably the only one who probably stakes a claim for a place in the greatest ever Everton team. And I think that's testament to how great he's been for us.
Yeah, I think it sums up because in my eyes, he's an absolute Everton legend. But I think it just sums up how many Everton players in this kind of Ken Wright era almost have we seen who have been at Everton through the peak of their careers. Like, there's not loads. I mean, I can't even think of many, to be fair. And especially not just the peak of their careers, but the peak to the extent that they got to it. You know, we always have players on the come up, like Lukaku was, but, you know, before he left. You know, we can see players like Tim Cahill, who were probably at their peak, but they never hit the kind of European, you know, the top European players as Baines has throughout his whole career. But like, and I think that just sets him apart massively from pretty much every player that's been around in my lifetime, that even now we're not going to have players like him who the ability that he had would just turn down a contract somewhere else to stay at Everton, because even now obviously we've got the money to spend, but even if, as we saw with Lukaku, we could afford to pay him, you know, what he wanted to, you know, earn at Manchester United or whatever, but he still left anyway. I don't think we'll see a player like Baines for a very long time. One of my favourite players ever, and I think comfortably an Everton legend. And it summed up just kind of his attitude. He just kind of strolled onto the pitch during the drinks break, made that brilliant challenge against Callum Wilson, And then there was no, like, you know, no like faff on at the end of the game, gave it a thumbs up to whoever was stood in the stands, just walked off. But, like, and just, I mean, I'm almost glad for him that it's happened like that, because it's clearly exactly how he wanted it, especially from Coleman's interview when he said it's how he wanted it, you know, just kind of stroll in, stroll back out, you know. That's just the player he was.
He is. He's definitely that kind of player, isn't he? Where he's like the guy at the birthday party who just doesn't want anyone to bring a cake out for him.
Yeah. He's just such a brilliant player, and he was for so long. And as Terry said, he's still probably getting to a lot of teams in the Premier League. That's the thing, especially with the experience. And I hope he stays on some role. I hope, because Coleman's mentioned in that interview that he's done today or yesterday, whenever it was, about 6 years ago he wouldn't see him as a coach, but now seeing him how he is, maybe he would be a coach. I can't see it. I hope he stays in some sort of capacity to deal with youth players, as I mentioned to you, lot in some sort of kind of loan development role, because obviously when players go out on loan, obviously we've struggled with the loan system massively, let's be honest. We've only kind of had like Gibson go out, Broadhead go out recently very much. And if they're not getting the constant kind of communication from people like Brands, people like Unsworth, you know, who have other jobs, other, you know, responsibilities that they have to fulfill, their development might not be the same. If you have a presence like Baines, who, it's not his job to sort out the loans, but when, you know, when you've got young players out, if they can come back to him as kind of like a point of call, some sort of liaise, I think it would work massively. And I think he'll have a massive influence if he stays at the club over the youth coming through, because of just his absolute experience, but also the ability that he has. But if he doesn't want to stay, I mean, I don't blame him. He doesn't seem like the character that would want to hang around. He probably just wants to, you know, just go on with the rest of his life, like, you know, like this never happened, you know, join some sort of indie band, go down to the pub, go to some Everton games. I wouldn't put it past him, but
he's just trying really, that type of player. He's
yeah, but
the
I really hope
character
he does
you could ever imagine, isn't he?
I hope they find just like a Baines role at the club. That's not your stereotypical coach, but just an absolute level that Leighton Baines could just find himself. He doesn't even have to turn up every day. Could come in, play his guitar for the lads in the under 23s.
That's why he'll be playing the guitar in the fan zone before kick-off.
that would be remarkable, to be fair. But sadly, I don't think I could ever see that happening. I wouldn't be surprised, you know, if he just hangs around Finch Farm now, just playing his guitar, talking to Coleman, you know.
Oh my God, that's what he's going to do. He's going to be like our equivalent of Jamie Webster and do all them stupid boss nights with a guitar. Oh,
I hope not. Like, I hope he doesn't turn up that equivalent.
Can you imagine? Oh God. But just
a brilliant player. Yeah.
I think before we finish on this one, we've got to touch on it. We talked about his greatest memories of Leighton Baines and all those great goals that he scored, free kicks. My greatest memory is when Leighton Baines ordered an ice cream at Craven Cottage. I think that's one of those all-time Everton. I mean, it's probably one of the best memories I've got of the last decade supporting Everton. It's just watching Leighton Baines order a 99er from some ice cream man outside Craven Cottage.
If there was ever like an ideal like photo that you'd want if you ran like the out of context Everton accounts or whatever, that would absolutely be the one. You know, Baines just doing what he does. You know, he never wanted to be clearly one of the big stars that you see these days. Everyone wants to be, you know, the big names. I mean, you don't even hear, you don't ever hear about what Leighton Baines does off the pitch, really. I mean, he's got that great photo with Alex Turner, I think it was, of those lads. I mean, that's like the most you ever seen. And Baines is like outside life, which just summed up the player he was. But that photo, and then giving those lads a lift, I can't even remember where they were going or what that was for, but that just summed him up perfectly. Just, you know, an Everton fan, really, who was playing for the club.
Yeah, I'll have to. Sorry, go ahead.
Pre-season game going to Blackburn there, and I remember at the time dying of cringe, going, "Oh, couldn't you have picked up like a nice dad and son? He had to pick up the worst lizards ever, the naughtiest left back in town." I was like, "Oh, he's immediately regretted lumping in his cards over there with those lads." But it just shows how sound he was.
Yeah, he's just dead cool, isn't he, in every way. Yeah, but we'll just have to, before we finish, I'll have to shout out to my best mate if he's watching, because he used to be a waiter in the quarter. And he was a waiter one day when Leighton Baines came in, and he only wanted the dessert, and there was no tables. And he said, no, you can't sit down. Sorry, you'll have to wait. And he said, no, it's all right, so I'll just eat it in the car. And literally, he just he just waited, got his dessert, and like just ate it in the front seat of his car. And he said he's just the soundest bloke on the planet.
Unassuming.
Unassuming. I think he sums up the Everton fan base very well, if you ask me. I think the typical humble.
Don't know about that. which part's the fan base?
Well, the humility more than anything else. I think he's just so understated, and you know, when you compare it to that lot across the park, it was definitely understated.
Well, yeah, good save. I was going to say it's not angry enough.
No, it's a good point. I'd love to have be as cool and composed as Leighton Baines, but you know, I've been watching Everton for too long.
I was always thinking, like, Leighton
Baines will turn into one of us after 13 years of watching it.
I was thinking, like, what I'd do if I ever met, like, Leighton Baines in the street. I don't know if I'd, like, act it cool and just kind of give him a nod or something like that. I don't know how I'd react.
I've seen him once in the street and he'd done exactly that, and he was eating a Greg's pasty.
I mean,
just vintage.
I've met him a couple of times, saved him in work and stuff. And when I used to work at JD, and I was the manager of a footwear department, and what I was meant to do was manage basically and let the staff like do things, and it was they'd order like the shoes for people, and then it'd go into a queue and it'd be on a screen, like you see them in like, pretty much every JD now. It'd be like a screen of orders that were coming down, it'd go green when yours was. And when I saw Leighton Baines, I walked over to him and I was just like, I proper abused my position and went, no, Leighton Baines doesn't wait in the queue like everyone else. I was like, what do you need, Leighton? And he just went, I need this and that for his kids. And I just went into the back because no one could stop me because I was in charge. Got them myself, took them completely out of the queue, and went, just come over to this till. Mate, if you're Leighton Baines and you walk into a shop that I'm running, you don't wait in no queue. You go straight to the till. The naughtiest left-back in town does not wait in a queue on my watch.
Clearly the naughtiest left-back in town doesn't wait to retire either. He retires when he wants.
So that's that was my Leighton Baines story. I crawled right up his ass, but
I mean, I wish I had a Leighton Baines story, to be fair.
The thing is, though, I think everyone, he's probably the, when people talk about like Everton icons of our generation, I don't think there's any who come, I mean, maybe Tim Cahill, I think, with the exception of that, I don't think anyone really comes close to Leighton Baines.
Yeah.
No, definitely not. I mean,
Tim Cahill, Leighton Baines, you've nailed it there. It's them two, isn't it?
And, you know, as a scouter, probably Baines edges it for me just because of the locality and the whole, you know, he's got, well, I say scouts, he's from Kirby, but we'll brush over that. we'll leave it at that. Anyway, we'll finish on a high note that Leighton Baines is probably the most iconic Everton player of the 21st century, and you can't say any better than that, really, can you? I mean,
could make me more guys. Jealous saying that you've met Leighton Baines a few times like that. That's absolutely I mean, you never see anyone. Literally.
I met him a couple of other times as well, but there was not as much to that. I chatted to him for 2 minutes, and then that was it. Like, but that one was the most interesting because that time I was a manager and abused me power to sort him out.
I never even spoke to him. I just let on to him while he was eating a sausage roll, and I think that's as good as I ever wanted to get, to be honest. That's like the perfect like one off scenario.
Yeah, definitely.
But yeah, if it doesn't work out for him, he'll definitely do well as like the face of Greggs or something.
That's a bit harsh, Craig. Yeah. Face of Greggs, dear me. I think Leighton Baines should be aiming higher as the face of Greggs, to be honest.
It's typical of his career, that never gets the recognition or the level he deserves.
what would you say he'd do with the rest of his life? advertise Greggs.
Harsh, to be fair. I want to see him go to wherever Tony Hibbert spends his day fishing these days. Just, I reckon I'd like to see those two just in that pond. You know that photo of Hibbert holding that massive fish? I wouldn't mind Baines just going there.
How good would it be just having like those two like do their own like vlog like this, but just about fishing or something? I think it'd be brilliant.
I like to think of it as like, you know, like Lord of the Rings, where they all go off at the end to like over the sea, or like the Hobbits and Gandalf and all that. I like to think all the Everton players who are popular, if you manage to finish at Everton and not be hated, you go off onto this mythical lake and just fish for the rest of the game. And Tony Hibbert's there.
What, when you say fish, you just drop them bait for Everton fans.
Too much, yeah. Anyone who manages to get out without being despised at the end gets to fish forever.
Goes to Tony Hibbert's fish in paradise.
You need a dire hero or live long enough to become the villain.
I'm telling you, Jerry made a children's book based off a joke me, him and Max said. I'm going to make that children's book, Tony Hibbert's Afterlife Paradise.
Oh, there you go. They'll be clamouring to sign you up for a deal for that one. Honestly, that's quality, that. I mean, wherever this lake is, I want to go there and do some fishing anyway.
You've got to earn it, though, to be fair. You can't just rock up to Tony Hibbert's Fishing Afterlife Paradise by just having this career. You know, you got to earn it first.
Yeah. Darlison's well on his way, but he's only young. It depends how he leaves.
Yeah, it's a good point. Like I say, you either die a hero or live long enough to become the villain.
I think the player reviews can now just come down to whether we think they'll make it to Tony Hibbert's paradise now as we rate Everton player seasons.
Yeah, sod the numbers. We'll just go by the Tony Hibbert fishing seal of approval. Right, next up we've got the first of our post-second hot bit of the season playing reviews, and we'll get straight into it anyway. So now the season is officially over. I mean, we didn't know where we stood back then, but we've finally got the season completely out of the way and we can get back to rating our players' performances this season. But today we're actually going to be reviewing a player who hadn't actually kicked the ball for Everton until about just over 2 weeks ago. And, of course, that player is Jarrett Branthwaite. So, yeah, it's a bit of an interesting one because we didn't really know much about him. But, obviously, we've had, just four games, not even four full games of watching Jarrett Branthwaite. But we'll go through it anyway. We'll start with you, Thomas. We only signed this lad in January from Carlisle United in League Two. But what have you made of him so far?
I mean, he's been absolutely brilliant. The way he's stepped in, I'm not going to say he's like a brilliant footballer. I'm sure I really hope he goes on to be. I don't think we can say that after four games. But just the ability to step into a team on the decline and be as good and kind of the calm and presence that he has been. Because imagine, you know, you turn 18 years old, you know, while the season's still going on. You know, you're 17 when you sign. You come into a team where team leaders like Gylfi Sigurdsson, you know, the captain sometimes, you know, don't care. You know, they're coming in, they're not kind of motivating anyone. You come into a team, you never play Premier League football. You barely even kicked a football in League Two, to be fair, because he didn't make loads of appearances for Carlisle senior team while he was there. And he's done really well to come in. I hope Holgate stays fit, and I hope maybe we do sign a centre-back to take the limelight off him a bit, because he's been thrown into a very much a baptism of fire. And I have called him the second coming of Maldini in one of my tweets, which was obviously a bit of a joke and some people didn't appreciate that, but I really hope he does well. I hope he's not just forced into it next season, because he still obviously has a lot of time to develop, younger than me, which is a ridiculous stat. I think I've said it quite a few times, but it's still the most insane stat I can think about. I think he's done really well when he's come in, but I hope he's given the chance to spend more time around the squad, not having to start every week, learning from the players around him before he's kind of just thrown in every game. Because let's be honest, after that Wolves game, I was concerned because I didn't personally criticise him for the foul he gave away and then obviously the free kick, but I knew there'd be so many people on Twitter who would come flying in. And I felt bad for him then, but he's answered them perfectly already. Had a good game against Villa, had a ridiculously good game against Sheffield United after a nervy start. And when you see young players kind of have nervy starts, sometimes, you know, you see them get substituted off. They don't really, you know, get their head down. But he had a poor start against Sheffield United, then turned around to become the man of the match, which is a lot to be said for a player that young. And I think he's got a lot of potential, to be fair.
Yeah, it's definitely something to look forward to next season when we need them, some things to look forward to. But Teddy, yeah, what do you make of Branthwaite's four appearances so far in an Everton shirt?
I mean, he's took everyone by surprise, hasn't he? I think even the club, he's took by surprise. There's no way he was brought in with one eye on playing first team football. What he's done is he's spared the club's blushes, because we went into the season with three senior centre backs and we got away with it right up until, you know, the project restart, when it obviously bit us quite hard because we got Mina and Holgate injured at once. I personally think he was brought in to be in the under-23s and be behind Lewis Gibson, who you've got to wonder, how does he feel right now? You know,
I think he went out on loan, and was he not out on loan for the restart? I think we'd have probably seen him.
Yeah, probably. I think he would have been ahead of Branthwaite in the pecking order, but he's come in and he's acquitted himself. You know, he's done really well. It's just now it's a matter of what do we do with him next, like, because he's obviously made the impression now, like, supporters have seen him, you can grasp onto those performances and go, right, well, he's an option. He's not this, like, you know, intangible under 23 player who you go, is he good enough? I don't know, I haven't seen him. But now people have seen him, anytime there'll be a bad centre back performance, people will clamour for him to come in.
Oh god, yeah,
that's fair enough. He's put himself in that conversation, so what do we do with him now? There's only two options. It's either goes out on loan, but a good loan, like a John Joe Kenny to Schalke loan, like goes to a good club who needs a centre back, not like, you know, Joe Virginia, he'll just go and he'll get dropped and then he won't play, he'll just sit on someone else's bench. You know, go to a club who needs a centre back, who play at a decent level, Championship or somewhere else, you know, one of the other leagues, because he's only young, like, you know, Thomas said then, he's younger than he is. Now that Baines has gone, they're all younger than I am. that's a weird thought. But he's still got mistakes to make. He's still learning. He's not played a lot of football. He's got the ability. He's got the talent. He's certainly got the physique. He seems like he's a proper player, like a men's side player. But he needs to go out and play regularly, week in, week out, so he can learn. I don't want him to be making his mistakes at Everton,
in front of angry Everton fans,
because it's too high a level, there's too much pressure. Like, I think he needs to be out on loan, a good loan, and be playing regular football. The other alternative is keep him around and have him be the fourth centre back if we get Gabriel and Michael Keane goes, because then you've got two left sided centre backs in Gabriel and Branthwaite. And you'd have two rights within Mina and Holgate. Now, there's obviously a lot of ifs and buts there. And, you know, Michael Keane, there's, you know, whilst a lot of people have mentioned him moving on because it seems like a good fit if we get Gabriel, there's no one linked with him. Could not happen. We could get Gabriel and Michael Keane stays. We could not get Gabriel. But there is something to be said for keeping him around, you know, the first team squads and having him figure in that. But what he cannot do now at this point, I don't want to see him play under 23 football. I think that'd be an aggression. He's gone from playing first team football in the Carlisle to having first team games in the Premier League. I don't want to see him then suddenly go into the under-23s. I think that'd be a step backwards for him. So for me, it's either on loan or incorporate him into the four. And if you're looking to bring Gibson back and then he goes and is the fourth centre back or whatever, you know, the plan is, then Branthwaite's got to go out on loan. I don't want to see him go out anywhere lower than the Championship. I wouldn't like to see him in League One. I think he's proved he can...
I think he's good enough for the Championship at worst.
Yeah, I think his pathway has been jet-propelled. I think these three performances... Was it three or four?
Four.
I think these four performances have knocked a year off his developments. Like, they've fast-forwarded them past the league. I think he would have went to a Fleetwood or a League One side had he not played. He'd have gone from League Two being bought into Everton's under-23s into a League One side, maybe. I think he's absolutely put the jet boosters on his progression, and now he's at the loan to Germany, loan to the Netherlands, no, loan to the Championship stage, and then come back and see if you're a first teamer. Credit to the lad, I think he's been brilliant.
I think this is a point now, sorry, just with our under-23s, because obviously there's been a lot questioned about, do we utilise the under-23s team correctly? We have so many players who get stuck there, they don't go out on loan. This is an absolute, this could be a turning point for the club in that kind of strategy of
how we handle it.
How we handle it massively.
Enough, I was just about to interrupt you with exactly what you've just said.
Sorry.
So, yeah, just well played, you're spot on.
Yeah, this is a massive chance now for the club to go, you know, we haven't done well enough with the under-23s. Ben and Gimmy hasn't done well enough. Bowler's done all right at all, but he hasn't pulled up any trees. Virginia was not good enough for Reading. And then you look at players like Matthew Pennington, who's like twice my age these days. You know, he's ridiculously old. Garbutt left at, what, 27?
He was older than Luca. He was older than Luca Dean by the time he left.
Ridiculous, really. This is the point now where we see if there is a genuine problem at the club with the structure. That if we now have a player like Branthwaite, who's done so well in the last four games, if he then gets put back into the under-23s, which is League Two level at best, I'd say, obviously, because they've kind of got the checker trade trophy, haven't they, where it's meant to be them. It's under-23s versus League Two and League One clubs. It tends to be won by League One clubs. So I'd say there's probably League Two-ish level for players like the under-23s. He cannot afford to drop into there now. And the club can't afford to put him in there now because they've seen it stunts players' growth massively. And if he needs a loan, I'm sure the club will know that because they're clearly intent on signing Gabriel. They'll have Gibson coming back, who's had his time out on loan. Branthwaite, just he can't afford to now go into the under-23s, waste away, because he looks like a very good player if he realises his potential.
Let's be honest, we've badly mishandled the under-23s for a long time. How do we best utilise the under-23s? Because who plays in that team when it's obviously a bit of a barrier to the growth, like you say?
I'd change the name for the kickoff. This wasn't my idea. I've nicked this off El Pavotti, so just full disclosure. Change it to what Man City do. Call it the development squad. Don't call it the under-23s. And the way to change it is just make decisions on players earlier. Don't have situations like Pennington where you're giving him contracts when he's like 20 and he doesn't look like he's going to be the first team centre back. Because then, you know, 4 years go by and he's like a middle 20s player who's never going to play for you. And like, you're just trying your best to, you know, you're going to end up loaning him until his contract runs out. Have a clear sort of strategy when it comes to the age range. Go, right, well, under 18s. And then when you turn 18, unless you're a special standout talent, when you turn 18, you go into the under 23s. And by the time you're 19, we make a decision on you. We either let you go, or we sign you up for another 2 years, and then by the time you're 21, we let you go, or we sign you up for a proper contract and what have you. We can't have players who are 23, 24, who are in this under-23 squad, because if you don't, you should know by then.
I was always under the impression it was always the under-21s, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, we didn't change it to under-23s. I think that was a league-wide thing, but
The unwritten rule should be under 21s, in my opinion.
I'd just call it, like City called it, I think it was the elite development squad. I'd just call it the development squad or the reserves or
Everton. Well, that's it. It was always reserves when I was a kid.
Yeah, I'd just call it the development team, and I'd just make it an issue. Like, you cannot go past a certain age without a decision being made. If you are 20, you're either being sold, or you're not getting a new contract, or you're going into the first team because you're good enough. And there'll be ones who slip through, but you know, we won't be spending. We've got players now on decent professional contracts who are never going to play. I mean, Garbutt's the one everyone holds up.
Pennington's the worst one, I think, for the worst example, though.
Yeah,
at least Garbutt showed a bit of promise.
Well, you know, Pennington is another one in the sense of he's, like I've said this before and I'll say it again, he's older than Yerry Mina. It's like, that's not his fault. He's a professional player, and he was a good player. Leeds wanted him like 2 years ago, and he's of a certain level. But we've just dragged our feet so badly. We've not made the decision on him. We've just dawdled. And now he's like 24. He's probably got a year left on his contract. No one's going to buy him. So we're just going to go, well, who can we loan him to until his contract expires? Like, you know, Nias and Martina, and it'll be the same for other lads like Callum Connolly and players like that. Just before we started recording, I saw a tweet put out by someone. I think it was Stop Bunching on Twitter. I can't, don't know the proper name. It's one of the lads who works on El Pavotti. He works with El Pavotti's firm, Market Insights. And he said that Anthony Robinson has got a 1.5 million release clause if we're going to relegate it. I would be comfortable if Everton went back and got him now, because we've sold him. We made the decision on him early. He's gone. He's proved himself at Wigan. He's getting linked with AC Milan. But he would be at AC Milan if it weren't for his medical, let's be honest. Watford won him, West Ham won him. He's clearly gone out and proved himself. And obviously he's got the release clause, but why, you know, in future, why don't we have buyback clauses and things like that? It's
got to be, if Marcel Brands is worth his salt, you've got to be doing that with these players and we've got to sell them early, like you say. How many times have Real Madrid done it with the likes of Morata and people like that? Well, Mariano.
If Robinson had not gone to Wigan, we hadn't sold him and made the decision, we've got Baines, we've got Dean, he's not going to cut it here. And then he was still here and he was playing under 23 football. No one had even, you know what I mean? He wouldn't have played that, you know, senior football.
He'd fade away. He's played championship football, which is not bad. That's a very respectable start to his career now. Whereas, like you say, the under 23s is the equivalent of probably League Two. So, you know, that's two rungs up.
It might not work. I know I'm a layman. I don't know how the contracts and that work. But if you make the decision when they're a lot younger, but you're scared that it's going to come back and bite you, try and put buyback clauses in them or put sell-on fees, put something in there.
Sell players and do those kinds of deals, yeah.
Rather than wrap them all up and keep them long-term and never use them. I mean, Callum Connolly, he apparently, you know, does really well wherever he goes on loan, but he's not going to play it for Everton. So let him go. Let him go and have a career somewhere else. We shouldn't have kept him and just let him have half his career in loans. I mean, it'd be different if we were like Chelsea and we had loads of like high profile international players. We were getting $6 million per loan. They make, you know, loads of money just from loan fees. If we had that, that'd be one thing, but I can't even imagine we do that. You know, we're loaning these players out to get some of their wages off the books. We're not loaning them out because it's a good source of revenue.
Absolutely. And I mean, it's just interesting that we've been run so badly in this respect. We've always had a good academy as well, which is, I have a funny feeling we had our fingers burnt. We're talking 10 years ago now with Dan Gosling, didn't we?
Yeah.
Where he exploited a thing in his contract and left for nothing. I think things like that might sort of have been playing in the academy's mind and thinking, you know, yeah, we don't want to fall into that trap again. But equally, we've gone from one extreme to the other. We're holding on too long. It's costing us more money than we need to. We need to get a much better strategy. And I think you guys have highlighted it perfectly here, haven't you?
The club needs a consistent contract strategy and structure that's not kind of taking a punt on players like Garbutt and giving them long-term contracts when they might have had potential. They just need a constant revolving door. You look at teams like City, who they have some of the best youth talents in the country, but they're all so young and they're under 23s. But also, they're getting new players every year. Our youth players have been the same youth players for the past like 5 years. Like they've just been stuck. If you look at the bigger clubs, yes, they have standout players like Mason Greenwood at United, but they have new players every year, which everyone's paying attention to, and it creates more competition for young players to kind of, you know, step up. And
it keeps the first teamers on the toes as well.
It's disappointing because youth systems these days are just not the Everton way. They're not the way that Ken Wright would want to operate the club. He wants to give everyone contract. He wants to have everyone sorted. He doesn't want to put kids out, you know, on the streets. But you got to be ruthless if you run the club like we're trying to run, like Mashari wants to run. And if we're going to try and save money on transfers, which we have to, the worst, you know, we've had one of the worst transfer strategies in the league for a few years. If you want to save money and you look to your youth team, you can't have youth players who have been stagnating for a while, if they're constantly changing, if there's almost like a flat approach where you come in, you got a year in the development side, if we'll call it that, you then maybe you get a year on loan. If you're not good enough, that's it. If you go out on loan and you do well, the club can either sell you because you've signed them on a 3-year contract. They can either sell you because you've got 1 year left and the club haven't, you know, left themselves up to kind of, you know, sign a player. Like, I don't want to compare us to Sunderland, but there was something on the Sunderland documentary where it was something like, you know, they had a bunch of talented youth players, but the contract strategy like left it up to, you know, they didn't have an optional 1 year extension, or they let them go on loan. And when they came back, the contract was up, which left the club massively kind of susceptible to not getting anything for these players. If the club just had a constant, consistent strategy and not kind of a scattergun of going, he might be good, let's give him 5 years. He might be good, let's give him 3 years. If you give everyone the same amount of time, the same kind of structure, the same flow through the whole club, we'll probably find better results because we can have a good youth team that can win Premier Division 2 or whatever they call it as much as they like. But at the end of the day, I'd much rather have one or two standout players than a team who's doing well in the under-23s.
We want players to come through to the first team.
I'd take one Wayne Rooney over the whole youth system at the moment, obviously apart from, you know, Gordon and Branthwaite like that. But, you know, you want...
the most decorated English player ever.
We only want a couple of them.
No, but I mean, in the way, like, I want one good player to come out of, you know, a crop of players rather than a bunch of average ones. If you know, of course not. Wayne Rooney, I take an abundance of them at the moment. But what I mean is, we need one or two standout players, and not just a good side who wins the under 23 double. As nice as it is, who honestly cares? Let's be honest.
It's long forgotten, and all of those players have already left now. So, you know, it meant nothing in the end in terms of first team success. And just on that note, before we finish up on Branthwaite, I think we need to be decisive this summer, don't we? Where we go with him.
Definitely. I don't want to chew me food twice, but a good loan. I wouldn't even go to Championship. I'd quite like to see him go abroad if possible, and you know, the Eredivisie or the Bundesliga or somewhere like that, but somewhere that needs a centre-back badly so he gets that John Joe Kenny year. John Joe Kenny is now an asset, whereas last summer he wasn't, so we'll either use him or we'll sell him for decent money, you know, depending on the market. Ideally, you want the loans to be like that. Obviously, all the players aren't going to get loans that good, but the better ones are. Jared Branthwaite clearly looks like he's one of the better youth products, so he's going to get a better loan than, say, an Ellis Sims will, who everyone is quite high on, but he hasn't proved as much as Branthwaite has at this point, has he?
Yeah, I think at this stage, we do need to start seeing more of these players get first-team appearances, even if they don't have to pull any trees up, but it just alerts people to them. I think the fact that they've made a few first-team appearances, even if it's only brief ones at the end of the season, like maybe the way Branthwaite has, I think we need to do
first-team more of that. First team and loan appearances, they're just the most important thing in young players' development, because it's kind of been described as like under-23s versus League Two. It's almost like technical ability versus physicality. I can't remember where I saw that. I'm ripping that off someone. I can't really think about it now. But I'm just going to give an example which none of you will know about. But at Gateshead this season, there's a young lad called Josh Coyote. He came in from Rotherham youth team, and he said he learned more in the half a year that he was in the National League North than he ever did in the academy, because it teaches you the physicality that you need to be a Premier League player these days. And it's so important to just, you know, get kicked about a bit, you know, face, you know, proper grown full-time, obviously full-time, but, you know, like proper established players, because you learn a lot more than playing City's 18-year-olds or, you know, United's 18-year-olds. That doesn't really matter in development at the end of the day.
Leon Osmond said the same when he went on loan. He said he couldn't believe it. The players were swearing at him, his own teammates. When he was a kid, he was going, "Don't lose the effing ball." And it was people's livelihoods that paid their mortgages. And he went, it was just an eye-opener compared to, well, that was under-21s at the time. Like, you know, the sort of cosy environments, it's probably 10 times worse now, of the under-21s, where they've all got Gucci wash bags and 4x4 cars and stuff. And they all think they're players, but they haven't done it yet. And, you know, that's part of modern football, I know, but they need to play proper football to see if they're good enough. And if they're not good enough, make money off them. So, you know, that's one thing we have done. We've developed a lot of players for the Football League. You know, if they're not good enough for Everton, sell them on. If we sell John Joe Kenny and Tom Davis, there's two players we've developed and they look amazing on the books because they've been developed and sold on.
Yeah. We need to do more selling on, though, rather than running contracts down like Pennington and Garbutt.
Yeah, exactly.
I think that's crucial with Branthwaite now. But if we finish up with Branthwaite anyway, we've got to do a score out of 10. What would you just go with? It's only four games, but...
On the potential Tony Hibbert Fish in Paradise Afterlife scale, I'd probably give him from what I've seen in the whole... Considering the circumstances, I'll give him an 8 out of 10 for what he's done. But not an 8 out of 10 player, I'd say. In the situation he's in, he's done an 8 out of 10.
Handled it very well, yeah.
Yeah.
Teddy?
Yeah. It's a bit skewed because of the sample size, but mate, he came from League One. at League Two, playing 9 games, and has played Premier League games and played well. I'm giving him a 10. He's done well. He could have had a disaster class, mate. As a kid who hadn't even played many games at League Two, and he came into Premier League matches and acquitted himself, giving him a 10. If he'd have played 38 games, he might have had a more realistic score, but I don't see how you can fault him when you take in circumstances. So 10, he's probably going to get the highest of the season.
I'd like to change mine to a 9, actually.
I was going to go with a 9, so we've sort of got a bit of an even spread there. And also, I think, you know, we're not going to top that. You can't top a 10 out of 10. I think Brantway gets the Player of the Season award right there. There you go. Yeah, so there you have it, guys. The Jarrod Brantway review. Let us know how you think he's got on. You give your scores out of 10, how you think he's got on.
Sorry, right. I thought you said we're going to put the Geordie out on the rest of the players. I was like, that's just how I'm describing that. I'll just come back and review all the players.
You're just there to if anyone steps out of line, you know, you can be the captain. You can be the one dishing out the fines, set the Geordie on them.
Join us next time when we put the Geordie out on the rest of the squad. I was like, all right, a bit harsh, but okay.
I'm going to use that from now on.
I'd like to put True Geordie out on the rest of the squad.
Oh, great.
He put a tackle in, that's for starters. Anyway, we'll leave this in because I like this. We'll just crack on with the podcast. If you are listening to the podcast, still, of course, it's time to round off with the quiz. It's the classic matchday squad quiz, and it's Teddy versus Thomas. Basically, I'm going to name an Everton fixture from the past, and our competitors reel off the members of the squad. First one to get a wrong answer, so it ends as the win. First, we're going to decide who goes first. I'll let Teddy pick this week. Heads or tails, Teddy? I've still got a coin. Look at that.
Heads.
Heads. And it is heads, Teddy. Would you like to go first or second?
I would like to go first, please.
You will go first. So I'm going to reveal the fixture in question. Let's cue the intense quiz music. And tonight, as we reach the end of this season, we're going to go right back to the start when things were a hell of a lot more optimistic. Back to the opening day, Crystal Palace versus Everton, Saturday the 10th of August 2019, almost a whole year ago now. But that's what we're going back to, the opening day, when things were a lot rosier. 11 starters and 3 subs at Crystal Palace. Teddy, you're up first. Let's do it, mate.
We're going with Jordan Pickford.
Jordan Pickford did play, indeed.
Gylfi Sigurdsson
did play.
Morgan Schneiderlin
did play, although he didn't finish the game. Didn't he get sent off?
Yeah.
On purpose, if you ask me. I mean, that's what
one of the stamping the floor, punching the floor with his hands in a tantrum.
It is what it is.
Seamus Coleman.
Yep, Seamus Coleman started.
Luca Dean
started.
Richarlison
played the full game.
We got the substitutes as well.
Yeah, the used subs anyway.
Jean-Paul Gabamon.
Yep, well, Jean-Philippe Gabamon, but I'll let you have that.
Jean-Philippe Gabamon, my mistake.
Sounds like a new fragrance coming out of Jean-Paul Gabamon. Jean-Paul Gabamon, he's off selling perfume somewhere, but Jean-Philippe Gabamon did come on.
Gomez.
Andre Gomez did start the game. How are we doing? We've got 1, 2, 3, 4 more starters and 2 subs.
Michael Keane.
Yep, Michael Keane started the game.
Yerry Mina
was the other centre back.
Dominic Calvert-Lewin.
Yep, Dominic Calvert-Lewin was the starter.
How many are left in the start? We must have done.
We've got one more starter and 2 more subs.
Bernard.
Yep, Bernard was the final starter.
Tom Davies.
Tom Davies was one of the subs. This is coming right to the wire. Thomas, you've got the last one. You've got to get him.
Because he should have come on instead of Kabamana, I remember it. He should have came on because Kabamana had only just come back. He was hopefully out of his depth. He was off the pace badly.
Oh, yeah. Moise Keane.
Correct. You've got every single one of them. Well done, lads. This is the—I mean, I know it's a lot more recent, but this must be a first on the Toffee Blues podcast. This, 14 out of 14. Well played, lads.
We're gonna have to find a tiebreaker.
So.
You know, we're not naming players on the bench who didn't get on, maybe, or the Palace team. We've done that before.
Yeah, well, I was going to do the Palace team.
I don't know any of them.
Right. Yeah, so basically, you've got to name anyone who started or sat on the bench for Crystal Palace. First one to get a wrong answer is the loser.
It's me next, isn't it?
Yep.
Patrick Van Arnold.
Yep, Patrick Van Arnold played.
I don't know any part. Zaha, I'd imagine.
Wilfred Zaha was a used substitute. This was shortly after the saga, wasn't it, this one?
We've been chasing him for a while, haven't we? Or have we? I don't know.
We always thought he was going to come off the bench and score the winner.
Yeah. Yeah, I find this quite easy because Palace's team's quite, you know, nailed in, isn't it?
Kind of.
Max Meyer
did start the game.
Andros Townsend
started the game. He's doing a pretty good job here, lads.
Well, Palace have only got like 18 players, really.
it's a very small squad.
Scott Dan
started.
I was going to go for the goalkeeper, but I don't know which one it would have been at that point. Do I want to risk it? No. Go somewhere in the midfield. What was it? I can't pronounce it. Milivojevic. Yeah, he'll do.
Yeah, he started. And of course, he picked up a yellow card.
MacArthur?
Yep, James MacArthur was the fourth and final midfielder.
Wow. Benteke must have started, surely.
Benteke did start.
If Zaha wasn't starting, who else did they play? I can't even think of anyone else.
I was
going to
say Benteke next. Ward?
Joel Ward started. This is really impressive, lads. Really? Honest to God, lads, I can't believe he's doing this well.
It's going to go down the goalkeeper at one point. Like.
We've got... How many more have we got? We've got two... One, two, three more starters, and one used sub. So we've got an odd number. So you've got to get this. Someone will get it eventually.
I'll go with Ayew.
Yep, Jordan Ayew was the starter. Two more starters and one sub.
The goalkeeper. Oh, I've given you a hint there. I don't know.
I don't know whether to go for the goalkeeper, but I don't know whether to let you go for the goalkeeper because you're unsure of it.
Well, there's two of them, isn't there? But I can't remember which one was starting at the time. So
I'm going to leave the goalkeeper with you. So I'm going to go with Kelly.
Martin Kelly.
Yeah.
Good part player for Palace, but he started the game.
I know that because I made some out of fancies him.
Well, there you go. That puts them up the best. This kind of pointless trivia comes in handy at times, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm. I'm going to take punt on the goalkeeper.
Go on.
And I don't know how to pronounce his name. It's not Wayne Hennessy, it's Guaida. I don't know how to pronounce his name. Is that it?
You didn't pronounce it brilliantly, but you got it right. He's the keeper.
So what do we do?
It all comes down to this, Terry. You've got to get the final used substitute, and if you get it, you win. If you don't, you lose, basically. you might have shot yourself in the foot by going first here.
Whole team, so well, there was a final new substitute.
Mm-hmm.
I remember watching this game because we had the white kit on, didn't we? In the
last year's kit, yeah.
Getting to see like Moyes Keane and Gabamon, but I'm trying to think who they brought on. I think I've got it because we went
out. I think I've got it, that's the problem.
I think go I've on. Got it because we went out to 10 men. They brought more attackers on to go for it. Was it Connor Wickham?
It was Connor Wickham.
I knew it.
Honest to God, I can't believe that you've got full marks on the Everton team and the opposition. This is absolutely unprecedented.
When it's so recent, it's easier to remember, isn't it?
Like, it is easier to remember, but I'm still very, very impressed.
Well, when we do the classic ones, I don't try and remember the match unless it's like a really big iconic match. Yeah. I try and remember the era and who was likely to have played at that time. Whereas when it's this season, I try and remember the match because
I'll tell you what, we need to do more from the same season that we've just covered because I'll tell you something, Teddy's beating Thomas in a quiz and that's just like unthinkable.
Beating is a strong word when you go first and you get the luck of the coin toss, to be fair. Well, you know, use what you've got in front of you. I understand that. And
when people
you'll be blaming the win next, Thomas. Come on.
when people win poker tournaments, do they still win? They didn't pick the cards. They were lucky. They've still won, though, haven't they?
To an extent,
it's all about strategy.
You know what? I mean, you beat me fair and square last time. Am I going to put this one down to a loss? No, it doesn't go down as a loss in my books or a win. I think it's a great show by both teams. You know, it's just it's a good one for the neutrals, but I don't know if I'm giving this one to anyone.
You don't consider it a loss, you consider it a lesson. something you can learn from, and I never lose.
What Teddy's basically saying, he's saying he schooled you there.
No, it's like, I never lose, I either win or I learn.
Right, for anyone who's out there still interested, the unused substitutes for Palace was Wayne Hennessy, Gary Cahill, James McCarthy, former Everton, of course, Victor Camarasa and Cheku Kouyaté. And the unused Everton subs were Jonas Lissel, remember him, Mason Holgate, Theo Walcott and Cheng Tosin. And the manager back then, for those who remember, we've got Marco Silva still in charge back in those heady days.
Yeah. Lewis Bellamorte as assistant manager.
Oh, God, yeah. Yeah, we should have just said who was the assistant manager. That would have been a nice
decision. Do you see Silva's assistant? Didn't someone put it in the group chat about them bottling Europe?
They bottled Europe on the final day, yeah.
It was like the final minute. It was like... Terry, want to pick a song before we start telling stories?
Terry, start looking for a song.
I'll look for the song.
It was like... they were losing 2-1. They had to win. And then they equalised and then scored again.
And then
there was like 6 minutes left. And I think there was like four players off the bench that were like sent off or something. I was looking at it on my phone. There must have been something that went on at the end of the game. But I think there was like three players not on the pitch that were sent off. One on the pitch that was sent off. And then they lost. I mean, that's just the most evident capitulation. I mean, I think you can ever...
I mean, there's only one place where you get infected with that kind of bad luck, isn't there?
You don't pick that up anywhere else.
It's terrible, but it's for Malisau.
I always read that and can never figure out how you say it.
That's my best attempt at Portuguese anyway.
Don't be coming to me for pronunciations after my performance on the quiz, to be fair. I really want to know where that clip came from. It's terrible, but it's Everton. Like, what was he talking about? It could have been something general. Something must have happened.
Back in those days, we still had like Dave Watson and everyone, so we weren't as charitable as we are now in terms of giving away easy wins to relegated teams. But, well, to be fair, we were nearly one of the relegated teams on a couple of occasions back then. So, you know, maybe the shoe's just on the other foot. But that, honest to God, that is the greatest addition to like Everton Twitter that you could ever wish for. I think that's the one true positive of a lockdown, was that lockdown brought that upon us.
I just can't believe somebody has
been sitting on that clip for near 20 years and never put it up on social media. And
temptation to bring that out earlier must have been something else.
must have waited for when things just got the worst they could possibly get. And I hope this is the worst it gets anyway. But yeah, fantastic. Terry, any updates on the song front?
Just seeing how long you could talk for. I've got a song. I've got no reason for it, but why not? I'm going to go with Mama, I'm Coming Home by Ozzy Osbourne. And that's because I like Ozzy Osbourne and Villa stays up. Why not? He's a Villa fan. He's from Aston. Mama, I'm Coming Home. Great song, great singer.
Ozzy Osbourne definitely owns a Villa in Aston.
Yeah, I don't think it's a Villa though. It's probably a terraced house. But I'm going to go with that. You know, it's all about Aston Villa this weekend. That was the real story. Like, forget Man United, forget all this. They were jumping around celebrating staying up by a point or whatever. And Roy
Keane, in front of no fans.
Roy Keane was furious, but you know, whatever. We said them staying up sent Bournemouth and Watford down, so fair enough.
Yeah, we can't argue with that, can we? No more plastic snakes in the Premier League.
Yeah, Watford are coming home to the Championship. See you later, boys.
Just Javi Gracia shushing gifts everywhere.
Oh, I just thought of an even better song. Conor Bennett on Twitter, did you see his tweet?
What did he say?
What's it called? He basically...
Oh,
yeah, did you see it? He basically quote-tweeted the Watford main account when they quote-tweeted Gary Lineker saying an absurd decision to sack... This aged well, so he quoted that and he just put Alexa, play that song, and then he put a YouTube link to
Paul Johnson,
Get Down.
That was the one.
It just hits amazing, so I'm going to leave it up to Toppy Blues John. Listen to the two of them, Ozzy Osbourne, Mama, I'm Coming Home, or Paul Johnson, Get Down, whichever one you think will go better. Either of them are good.
This is going to be a very interesting end to this show now, because we will figure out what John's taste in music is. Because
is he into
hard rock or is he into Ibiza anthems?
He's typically not into hard rock, but he did message me after the last quiz win when I picked some 41 in Too Deep and said it's not usually my thing, Teddy, but I'm a big fan of that. So thanks for that. He's never done that before with any song.
You may well have converted him there.
He'll have his nails painted black and
around
his head in no time.
Yeah,
you wouldn't really get it, Terry, but I actually get those messages every time I win a quiz. John's always likes my music, but I guess if you only win two in the whole season against me, you only get those messages.
Thomas is coming on with his like unbearables and asterisks everywhere. He's going to put an asterisk on your win there, Terry.
This is the quiz equivalent of Bernardo Silva having that cup of tea in the Garden of Honor. He can't give me the credit I'm due.
Well, there you have it, guys. That's the end of the podcast. We're going to leave you with whatever our editor goes with out of Paul Johnson's Get Down and Mama, I'm Coming Home by Ozzy Osbourne. So yeah, enjoy whichever one of those we end up going with. And until next time, thank you for tuning in on the Toffee Blues.